Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with host Dr. Gloria Horsley, marriage and family therapist, author, and international expert in the area of grief and loss. Tune in and hear bereaved parents and siblings share their stories of loss, hope, and renewal. You will learn what they have done to cope, how they have established a new normal in their lives, and how they have gone on to do fantastic things. Dr. Gloria dedicates this show to her deceased son, Scott, and to all of the parents and other family members who have lost loved ones before their time. And now, with Healing the Grieving Heart, here's your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley.
Hello, I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley. Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart. There are no simple or quick solutions to dealing with loss. Each of us is unique and special, as are our relationships and our responses to loss. This is especially true when we speak about perinatal loss or the loss of a child prior to birth or shortly after. Being sensitive to the grieving process of parents who have suffered a miscarriage is a fairly new concept in the medical community. Prior to 1980, there was, according to our guest today, Dr. Irv Leon, a conspiracy of silence. Medical caregivers typically tried to prevent parents from mourning a stillborn or neonatal death by prohibiting any contact with the dead child, disposing of the body unceremoniously and anonymously, prescribing tranquilizers for parents to dull any expression of grief, advising them to forget the experience, and often suggesting another pregnancy soon. Fortunately, things have changed, and today we'll discuss this most important issue of healing the broken bond. Please join us on our show today by calling our toll-free number, 1-866-472-5792, with questions or comments regarding the losses in your life. That's 1-866-472-5792. And remember that just going about your day-to-day business is an accomplishment, whether it's working in the home or the office. You can also email me through my website, healingthegrievingheart.org. And remember that these shows are all archived on healingthegrievingheart.org, as well as compassionatefriends.org website and Voice America. Again, today our topic is Healing the Broken Bond, Mourning Pregnancy Loss, and my guest is Dr. Irv Leon. Irv Leon is a clinical psychologist and adjunct faculty at the University of Michigan Medical School. He's the author of When a Child Dies, Psychotherapy for Pregnancy and Newborn Loss. He's also written a chapter in a book of gynecology and obstetrics. It's called Helping the Family Cope with Prenatal Loss. He's a bereaved sibling as well as a bereaved father in that his wife has had three ectopic pregnancies and has had unsuccessful attempts at in vitro fertilization. He's also had a very successful adoption. Welcome to the show, Irv, and may I call you Irv?
You may call me Irv. Pleasure to be here.
It's a wonderful to have you on our show today. Before we get started, I wanted to read an email. My audience is so great to send me out some emails, and if you want to email me, you can do it through healingthegrievingheart.org. I received an email from Howard from Tucson, and he says, last week we did a show, The Bereaved Marriage, and he said, with Mel Erickson, and he said, I really enjoyed your show called The Bereaved Marriage. I was glad that you took on the difficult topic of sex and intimacy. With the loss of our daughter, it's really been difficult. I've decided to pamper my wife in small ways, such as checking to see if she's comfortable, asking if she has enough light when she's reading, and asking if she'd like something to eat or drink, and so on. This allows me to feel intimate with her. Each night we give each other a kiss and say, I love you, and that really means so much to both of us. Thanks again for devoting a show to the sensitive issue of intimacy and grief, and for having the courage to talk about the subject with such frankness. I went to bed with a smile on my face. Well, Howard, I wanted to tell you thanks for the email, and certainly any time that we can help a bereaved parent to go to bed with a smile on their face, we're happy about that. Irv, again, welcome to the show, and it's great to have you on.
Same here.
And I talked to you right before the show, mm-hmm. I wanted to talk to people about what we're going to talk about today, because it's such an interesting topic, dealing with not only having a miscarriage, but the death of a child, which is called the perinatal period. Can you tell our audience what exactly that is?
You know, when I think of these losses, I like to think of it in the broadest context. That's why I sometimes use the term reproductive losses. That includes perinatal loss, and that's a loss which occurs from the 20th week of gestation until the first month postpartum. But that's actually a small percent of pregnancy losses. It's only 1.2%.
Mm-hmm.
And other pregnancy losses, which are much more common, tend to be overlooked. Ectopic pregnancy, tubal pregnancy, occurs almost twice as much as a perinatal loss. Miscarriages occur 10 to 15% of all pregnancies. Infertility, about 1 out of 6 of all couples. And if you expand it even a bit more in terms of pregnancy termination where there's a fetal anomaly, giving birth to a disabled or special needs child, making an adoption plan or adopting a child, we're talking about a lot of losses which interfere with making and parenting a healthy, biologically related child. And the reason I like to think of it in these broad terms is that often it's a death, meaning the death of a baby, but sometimes when it occurs earlier, like a miscarriage, it's not even experienced quite like that. For some it is, many it's not. But there's a terrible blow to one's self-esteem and self-worth.
Yes, I was really interested in reading your article about that and thinking about a blow to self-esteem. I don't think most people think of it in those terms, do they?
Well, they don't. But if you think about it, particularly from the woman's perspective, and this is a big difference between how a woman experiences it and how her partner, typically a man, experiences it. The loss is within the woman's body. There's a sense of losing a part of oneself. There's a sense of feeling one's body hasn't functioned adequately or competently. So there's often a terrible sense of failure, a terrible sense of guilt. What if I would have done this or would have done that? Would that have made a difference? So a woman's grief is usually marked by much more guilt and self-blame than the prospective father is.
Yeah, you're really kind of the factory for the baby. You're supporting the whole system.
Exactly right. And that happens with all pregnancy losses, and it could happen particularly when one talks about infertility, where one has to go through those very difficult infertility procedures, which can go on for years and years. And we, of course, know about and are happy to hear about the miracle babies, which are common enough that they're not so much miracles, you know, children born through IVF.
Right.
But a lot of those situations...
And IVF is in vitro fertilization for people. Yeah.
That's right.
And a lot of hormones going on with that. And, you know, that's the other issue after having a miscarriage or having a child die. And even after giving birth to them, you have a lot of hormones floating around there also.
That is true, although I'm going to say that generally from what we know, the hormonal effects, while they can be intense with any pregnancy, you know, after delivery you have the typical 4 or 5 day blues, and that can happen 25 to 85% of all women, those what studies indicate. Usually after the first week or so with most women, they're kind of getting more back to normal, but it's the grief when there's been some reproductive loss or trauma that they sit with and which
now, would you call that postpartum depression with any of that, or is that only if you have a viable living child?
No, I'm going to distinguish, because I think it's important to distinguish these terms. Postpartum depression is a separate disorder that typically occurs 1 month to 6 months after birth. And while it's associated with a family history of depression, typically postpartum depression is due to what we call psychosocial environmental variables, not having that much support, being overwhelmed with being a mother, stressors, difficulties in the relationship with one's spouse. And that kind of depression often, not always, often can be benefited by medication, antidepressants, as well as psychotherapy. When you were talking before, just as an aside, in terms of how much procedures have changed in dealing with pregnancy loss, and it really is dramatic. If you had a textbook from 30 years ago, whatever was said in that textbook of handling perinatal loss, one would do the opposite.
Oh, that's amazing.
Meaning that one would want to encourage grieving, one would hold, see, and touch the baby. The one thing that hasn't changed, unfortunately, is sometimes our reliance on medication when we have a loss such as this. Used to be, 30 years ago, Valium was a rage, and that was prescribed. Now antidepressants are a rage.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be careful. If someone has a clear clinical depression, antidepressants can be a part of treatment. But too often, after these losses, I'm not talking about postpartum depression now, I'm talking about the kind of losses we just mentioned, people will resort to medication when what women need more than medication is compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And too often we have a technological solution, meaning, you know, give someone a pill, as opposed to allowing a woman to sit with her grief. You find the same thing in terms of dealing with a deaf and older child, of course, where there's...
Now, let me say with our audience out there, I'm thinking they're sitting out there thinking of the mistakes the medical community made with them, or maybe they had a doctor that was trained 30 years ago that is not as wasn't as sympathetic with them as they felt that they should have been, or whatever. What would you suggest for those folks out there?
Well, you know, things are different.
What has changed? Let's talk about what has changed so they can hear that.
As I was saying, everything has changed. It really used to be, let's say, back in the late 1960s. This began to change in the 70s, but it really didn't become hospital uniform policy until the 80s, that if there was a dead, if a baby died in a stillbirth, that baby was whisked out of the room. No one would allow the parents to see the baby. They were told to forget the baby, not talk about it, usually sedated with a tranquilizer, told to become pregnant as soon as possible. That has changed completely. There's encouragement now to hold the baby, get to know the baby, because the woman has attached to the baby before the baby was born, but she needs to see what she has lost.
Right.
And the medical community and hospitals are really so much better at this now than they used to be, because when the baby is born, and if it's a baby who's died, we in fact see women bond to their babies like live babies. They begin to touch them with their fingers. Then they move to their palms, and they first touch the extremities. Then they move to the trunk. And what they do is they notice the family resemblance. He looks like mom or dad or an uncle. They identify that not just as a baby, but a specific member of the family to be grieved. Now, if a woman hasn't had that experience because it occurred 30, 40 years ago, people are resilient. You can find your own way of trying to memorialize.
Yeah, well, yeah. What about the people who didn't hold their babies and now, you know, obviously it's too late, and
well,
sometimes family members suggest that they don't do it, and I've seen a lot of experiences where particularly male members of the family sometimes don't want their wives, mothers, or whatever to experience that traumatic.
In terms of now, they've
said to him, you know, you really don't want to see the baby. And then you also had something in your article which I thought was very interesting about some people may choose not to see it for reasons. Maybe it's a birth defect, or maybe they just don't want to do it.
And
the medical or the nursing community is into this protocol that now we all see our babies, maybe we don't want to see our baby.
Right. Okay, this is it. Good question. Let me try to answer it.
Okay.
I'm all for individualizing how people respond to these losses. No one should be told how to grieve, whether to see their baby or not. Having said that, it is almost universal that when a woman who's given birth to a near-term, late-term, perinatal loss, with some gentle encouragement, not saying that you should, but that many women can find it helpful to see and to get to know their babies, that's a very valuable experience. It really allows them, to grieve that loss.
And also to say goodbye in a way.
Right. Now, where it gets more complicated is when talks about a different loss that I'm going to bring up, which is when there's a pregnancy termination for fetal anomaly. One has an amnio in the second trimester. One discovers a major fetal anomaly. It may be Down's. It may be an anomaly which is fatal. And one chooses to end the pregnancy. And if one chooses, and this is a choice often, to have a labor and induction, then one has a very difficult decision. Do you choose to see the fetus slash baby that you decided to end?
Mm-hmm.
And for some women, it is too painful, understandably, because the guilt can be enormous. But I've worked with a lot of women with this loss, and many women do choose, even under those circumstances, to see the baby in a pregnancy they've ended, because for them, too, it allows them to embody their grief, to connect it with a person, a baby that they get to know. But that's a more complicated loss, and one needs to be very careful not to be pressuring women to see their babies in those instances.
That's great. It's time for us to come up on break now, and my guest today is Dr. Irv Levine, and our topic today is healing the broken bond, mourning pregnancy loss. And Irv is the author of When a Baby Dies, Psychotherapy, Pregnancy, and Newborn Loss, and he's also written a great article in a book called Helping the Family Cope with Prenatal Loss, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later on the show. Coming up with us on the show after break is Dr. Heidi Horsley. She's adjunct professor at Columbia University School of Social Work, She works as a clinician and researcher for the FDNY Columbia University Family Assessment and Guidance Program, which provides therapy for children of firefighters killed in the World Trade Center disaster. Heidi's a bereaved sibling and has suffered pregnancy loss, and she is recently adopted. Heidi is my daughter and sometimes my co-host on the show, so she'll be on with us after break. If you want to call in, our line is 866-472-5792. Please stay tuned for more on Healing the Broken Bond.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. LibraryofLife.org is a proud sponsor of Healing the Grieving Heart. An everlasting memorial website created at LibraryofLife.org is a permanent place to cherish and share your loved one's life through photographs, personal stories, poems, music, video, and heartfelt reflections. LibraryofLife.org helps thousands of families connect to a community of people who are dealing with a similar loss. I, too, have created a beautiful website for my son, Scott, and know that the process is simple and can be tremendously healing. Visit LibraryofLife.org today to find out more.
Hi, this is Mark Victor Hansen. You know me for Chicken Soup for the Soul, the One-Minute Millionaire, and Cracking the Millionaire Code. And what I want you to know is that if you want to have rip-roaringly good health, listen to Health Crusades by my friend John Farley.
Tune in to Health Crusades with John Farley every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you tired of being tired? Are you sick of sitting around while life passes you by? You can get back on track by tuning in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time for Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look. Attracting Abundance is the program that empowers you to finally break through your limiting beliefs and blocks and shows you how to succeed in all areas of your life, from improved financial abundance, health and weight problems, as well as your relationships. Don't wait another week to be joyful. Listen to Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look, this Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffered the loss of a child.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley. Our topic today is Healing the Broken Bond, Mourning Pregnancy Loss, and my guest today is Dr. Irv Leon, clinical psychologist and adjunct faculty of the University of Michigan Medical School. Dr. Leon is the author of When a Baby Dies, Psychotherapy for Pregnancy and Newborn Loss. He's a bereaved sibling as well as a bereaved father in that his wife has had 3 ectopic pregnancies and has had unsuccessful attempts at in vitro fertilization. Dr. Leon has also had a successful adoption. Dr. Heidi Horsley is also joining us. She's an adjunct professor at Columbia University School of Social Work. She works as a clinician and researcher for the New York Fire Department Family Assessment and Guidance Program. This program provides evaluations and ongoing intervention to facilitate coping of spouses and children that were killed. Fathers were killed in the World Trade Center disaster. Heidi's a bereaved sibling and has also suffered pregnancy loss. She has also recently adopted. Heidi and Irv, welcome back. Irv, welcome back. And Heidi, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Pleasure to be here.
Great. It's good to have you on. I think you both have some personal commonalities in professional and also the adoption thing. So we'll get into all that as we move on to the show. Heidi, could you tell us a little bit about your experiences?
Sure. I really appreciate the opportunity to share my experience because I don't think that women that have had miscarriages have that opportunity very often. I have one biological son, and he is now almost 8 years old. And several years ago, my husband and I decided we wanted to have another child and give him a sibling. And I started. I tried to get pregnant, and I found out that I had something called secondary infertility, which I actually knew nothing about because I just assumed, because I had had my first child and that was very easy, that this would happen again. So in the process, I ended up having two miscarriages, and they were both during the first trimester. And I went through infertility and had a surgery, et cetera, and was not able to get pregnant again. What was interesting about my own experience and what I think, from what I've read about in Herb's article, I think is common, which I didn't know at the time, many did not recognize my miscarriage as a significant loss. And people really interrupted my grief. Mm-hmm. And the way they did that is they said things like, well, at least you know you can get pregnant. Mm-hmm. And at least you already have a child. Mm-hmm. And at least you were only in your first trimester. Mm-hmm. And so not only was my grief interrupted, but I almost feel like I didn't have the right to my grief. And so I really kept it to myself and didn't talk about how I was feeling. Irv, you mentioned something earlier which really struck a chord with me, and that is I really felt like my body had let me down.
Mm-hmm.
And that somehow it was my fault.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt a lot of guilt. I mean, I would go through what had I done? Did I have too much stress?
Mm-hmm.
Had I not eaten healthy enough? Did I not exercise enough? Was it that Diet Coke I had?
So much of what you're saying rings true with the couples and the women I work with who've had miscarriage. I mean, miscarriage so often is viewed, unfortunately, as a medical non-event. It
mm-hmm.
happens. Woman goes into the ER, as long as it's not an ectopic, which can be a life-threatening event.
Mm-hmm.
She's told to go home, wait what develops, and one just doesn't get the recognition of what this loss means. And it's interesting. Studies have looked at how people feel about their caregiving after a later-term loss, a perinatal loss, like a stillbirth, and usually the evaluations are glowing. When they talk about miscarriage, they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Medical caregivers really let couples down by not acknowledging how, for many women, this is a tremendously difficult loss, especially when this is a very wanted pregnancy. With miscarriage is sometimes women, it's an unplanned pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
and they may be shocked to learn that they're pregnant, and then their reaction to a miscarriage can be very confused
mm-hmm.
because they're not clear as to how much they wanted it. But especially for a wanted pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I want to quickly add is that these days, technology being the way it is, once you have that first ultrasound, usually it's 7 or 8 weeks, and once
mm-hmm.
you see the heart beating, that is no longer a fetus for many women. It gets experienced as a baby. And when that happens, the depth of the loss becomes that much greater. I mean, our technological advances means that earlier and earlier we're experiencing pregnancies not as a fetus, but as a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so we have our audience out there, and they've had a miscarriage, or they've had a baby die shortly after birth or whatever, and they're out there sitting thinking, okay, I didn't get the support, now what? What can they do now? Is there some way, I'm thinking as a parent, and certainly of Heidi, what could I say now? What could people ask of health caregivers now? What could I ask of my family now to support me? What do I need to do?
Do you want me to try to take a shot at that?
Sure.
With miscarriage, particularly earlier, there's not the opportunity to see the baby the way there is with a later loss. But what I've seen with many women who've had a miscarriage, and this doesn't happen to have to happen right at the time of loss, is they find some way to memorialize their loss.
Mm-hmm.
For many women, just to echo what Heidi was saying, there's a loss of that, of Mother Nature. There's a loss of that creativity, one that wasn't able to make a baby, which one identifies with being a woman. And I've seen women, after a loss like this, make a sculpture, write a poem, make a quilt, finding some way to put their creative energies. Another thing that can be useful...
That, excuse me for a minute. That could also be a way to bring your family in.
Yes.
If you're doing that, then your family members say, "What are you doing?" And a way for them to realize that you are doing something, that there is something going on.
The challenging thing with miscarriage is often, not always, but often, because again, it's within the woman's body, she may be quite a bit ahead of everyone else in terms of attaching to it. So the husband may not feel that kind of loss. There's a term, incongruent grieving, that describes the differences between them.
What resonates with you in this, Heidi?
I really identify with what Irv is saying as far as the women and men grieving a little differently, especially during a pregnancy loss and especially during one that's earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
Because your body changes fairly quickly when you're pregnant, and you do start to bond and attach to this fetus and this unborn baby. And I didn't feel like my husband was very attached to the process yet, because he couldn't physically see that I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I felt attached. And, you know, I grieved not only the loss of the pregnancy, but I grieved the loss of the future with this unborn child.
Absolutely.
You know, what would she look like? What would her hit him? What would their personality be like? What would the sibling relationship be like?
Absolutely. This is critical. And this is true of all pregnancy losses, where it's the death of a dream.
Mm-hmm.
If I could say, you know, timing being the way it is, I had an hour, a couple hours ago, I was meeting with a woman who had a perinatal loss. And she was at church, and she was hearing the minister talk about sometimes we think of a road that we haven't gone down, and it can be useful to explore what would have happened if we went down that road. And she asked me, would it be healthy to go down that road in terms of imagining what would have happened if a child had lived? And I don't tell people how to grieve, but I said it is the most natural thing in the world to go down that road.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking of it,
and imagine, because that's where a lot of the grief is. It's not a grief over the past, it's a grief over the future that you're never going to have.
Right.
And you have that in a different way when you have a child who's born with a disability. You have the pleasures of what they can do, but there's also some grief over them not being able to reach the milestones of doing some of the things that you may have wished for them to do. That happens with infertility, where you don't have the wished for biological child. So lots of ways, it's really grieving for a dream that didn't come true.
And I'm thinking, what a wonderful thing for our audience to think about. If you're a writer, you could write a wonderful story about what they would have been with their life.
You know, speaking of writing, it's almost like you're reading my mind. There actually is a wonderful book that I'm going to put in a plug for. Not that I have any contact with the author. I never met her. But it's a novel. It's called Luscious Lemon. And it's written by Heather Swain. I don't know if you've come across this, Heidi, or not.
No, I haven't.
But it's just the story of a couple who I don't think this gives it away. It's not intended to be the story of a miscarriage, but it documents so beautifully a way that a miscarriage is experienced that I think it's kind of her way of dealing with and expressing this loss. She doesn't say if she actually had one, but my bet is that she did, because it shows such a personalized awareness. I mean, what I did in terms of the losses I had, ironically, I started writing this area before I had the losses of the ectopics. But after I had the loss of the ectopics, I stayed in this area and did writing. I mean, my approach was to write a book. My wife's approach in this was to write a poem, which actually was at the beginning of the book.
Do you have that poem? Do you want to read it to us when we come back from break?
I'd be happy to.
Okay, it's time for us to go to break now, and please join us on our show by calling our toll-free number, 1-866-369-3742. Our topic today is healing the broken bond, mourning pregnancy loss, and my guest is Irv Leon, clinical psychologist, and also joined us is Heidi Horsley, adjunct professor at Columbia University School of Social Work, and she is also a clinical psychologist. Please join us on our show today. You can also email me through my website, healingthegrievingheart.org. All of these shows are archived on the healingthegrievingheart.org, on compassionatefriends.org website, as well as Voice America. Please stay tuned for more from Dr. Leon and Dr. Horsley.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. LibraryofLife.org is a proud sponsor of Healing the Grieving Heart. An everlasting memorial website created at LibraryofLife.org is a permanent place to cherish and share your loved one's life through photographs, personal stories, poems, music, video, and heartfelt reflections. LibraryofLife.org helps thousands of families connect to a community of people who are dealing with a similar loss. I, too, have created a beautiful website for my son, Scott, and know that the process is simple and can be tremendously healing. Visit LibraryofLife.org today to find out more.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs. I start to cough.
Did you know your child's asthma attacks can be triggered by things like shower curtains, a blanket, even a teddy bear?
I feel like I'm choking.
And there are many other things in your home and your child's classroom you may not know about. For the latest information, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Help prevent your child's asthma attacks and avoid the emergency room. Call toll-free 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. That's 1-866-662-8822. Or visit www.noattacks.org.
I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffered the loss of a child.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, and our topic today is Healing the Broken Bond, Mourning Pregnancy Loss. And my guest today is Dr. Irv Leon, clinical psychologist and adjunct professor at University of Michigan Medical School. Dr. Leon's the author of When a Baby Dies, Psychotherapy for Pregnancy and Newborn Loss. He's a bereaved sibling as well as a bereaved father in that his wife has lost three ectopic pregnancies and has unsuccessful attempt at in vitro fertilization. Joining us today also is Dr. Heidi Horsley, who is adjunct professor at Columbia University School of Social Work. She works as a clinician and researcher for the fire department and Columbia University study with the World Trade Center disaster families. Heidi is a bereaved sibling and has suffered pregnancy loss. She is recently adopted, and Dr. Leon is also adopted, which is interesting. And Heidi is also my daughter. Welcome back to the show, Heidi and Irv.
Thank you.
And I wanted to read an email before we were talking to Irv about talking about male-female, and he's also going to read us a poem. But Lisa from Bangor, Maine sent us an email. She said that she had heard that Dr. Leon was going to be on the show and that she has had a friend who had twins die at 5 months ago. She said, and they were in, before their birth. They were they were supposed to be born in 3 more months, I think she says. So they were, 6 months in, I don't know, what do you call them before birth?
In utero, that's the word
I wanted. She has 2 children, 8 and 5, and she has cut off all her friends and doesn't want to talk about the twins. If I do see her, what would you recommend?
Well, that's a tough one, and I am going to say that's not the usual reaction. Because what usually happens is the other people don't want to talk about the twins, or if one of the twins dies, just wants to talk about the live twin. But my view of this is that people grieve in different ways, and I would respect her wishes.
Mm.
I would not put upon someone that they should talk about it. Now, this happened 5 months ago?
Yeah.
you know, how someone reacts in the first month, in the first half year, the first year, things can change. But I think people need to respect how the griever chooses to deal with this. We all assume, not accurately, that there's one way of grieving. In fact, there are studies which indicate that a large chunk, I'm not talking about 5 or 10%, but 20 or 30% of people who have a major loss don't grieve in the usual way and don't seem to have major problems later. Mm-hmm. So we really need to recognize there really is variability in this. And to not assume that, you know, the way you grieve is the usual yearning and pain and crying. That may be the typical way, but it's not the only way.
Plus, she may be grieving alone.
Yes.
And not in public, and people may not see her grief.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they may assume she's not grieving. Well, maybe she just has a different way of grieving.
Yes. And just to kind of piggyback on that, there are real cultural differences. I'm not saying that this woman belongs to a different culture, but than the usual mainstream one. But particularly in a place like the U.S., there are some cultures which really do not grieve openly. It is a much more private thing. That's important for counselors and therapists to be aware of, because there are some people who just are not that comfortable showing that grief.
Mm-hmm.
And one important subculture where that's true is the gender called male. Many men do not feel comfortable grieving in public and will tend to do it in a much more solitary way.
Mm-hmm.
So there are real differences among people and genders and
Great.
With that.
Good. I hope that helps you, Lisa, and thank you. And to me, I would say to you, just hang in there as a friend and keep inviting her out for lunch, or, you know, maybe you can take your her kids to the zoo or something, maybe to give her a little time off. But it's great to have friends that care enough to email in about these issues. Irv, when we went to break, we were talking kind of a little bit about male-female issues, and
mm-hmm.
you were saying that your wife wrote a poetry, and yours
yeah.
was to think about going directly to a book. And I said,
yeah.
"Would you?" And you did write a book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And well, then she wrote the.
Yeah. I wrote about 200 pages of what she was able to, in her own way, more poignantly describe in one page. So, and I'll read it. It's a brief poem. It's called First, and this was written after our first ectopic pregnancy. You were my first, a July baby to be born in the hot sun, when the river glistens and trees are full, fruit ripe, ready to drop. But I lost you in cold December, under operating lights, in a river of blood. I lost you when you just begun, before the July river, before the first light of day. And with you, I took one step closer to death. I don't read that poem that much, but in some ways it shows some important differences.
Irv, you got to stop for a minute.
that's
you've taken us back.
Let people digest that first, huh?
Whoa, that's an incredible poem.
Yeah.
Really incredible.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay.
I think that really captures it.
It really does. And that, and just, you know, as our audience, if you, an ectopic pregnancy is a tubal pregnancy, right?
Right. Right.
So it's the very beginning, because as the cell divides, the tube cannot tolerate that much, you know, dividing, and so there's pain, and the tube generally has to be removed.
Right.
And just to think of the energy that your wife had behind that cell that not only divided how many times, and amazing.
Yeah. But the thing that really strikes me is, she was able to experience this, obviously, as much more of a baby than I did.
Right.
It's described as a baby. But when I read the poem, tears come to my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Because vicariously, through her, I experience it more as a baby. And that's actually true, I think, of a lot of men. I will sometimes, when I'm with a couple, ask a man, you know, what his grief reaction is. And he talks about it in not an unfeeling way, but not with that much emotion. Then when his wife talks about it, tears come to his eyes. They begin to well up. I mean, for many men, they do vicariously grieve through their wives. The grief experience is different, but that can be a way that brings them closer together. Many couples are afraid after a loss like this, oh, the marriage is going to be in danger. If the marriage is solid before, it's probably going to be stronger after.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it does not tear couples apart, even though, as we spoke earlier, the grief reaction among men and women is different. A man's grief tends to be shorter, not as intense, not as much filled with self-blame and guilt.
Now remember, audience, when you hear Irv say that, these are pregnancies that maybe were pre-birth and also shortly thereafter,
right,
because I don't want them to feel like they don't grieve as long,
right,
you know, for older children.
Well, and
right.
I think
absolutely
also that men, I'm generalizing, but oftentimes men want to fix the problem, they want to
yes
take care of it, and
yes
and in this situation they can't, and that's very frustrating.
Yep.
They just need to sit with the grief and sit with their wives with the grief, but they want to make it better.
But that's a big part of it. And for them, for some men, what is really traumatic is the helplessness they feel.
Right.
Many
yeah
young men, and mm-hmm without stereotyping too much, engineering types, have the sense of, if there's anything that's wrong, I can fix it.
Right.
And if they're in their early 20s and they've been able to fix everything, this is something they can fix.
Mm-hmm.
And it hits them right in the face. And it takes them a while to develop a different image, a different kind of schema of the world. I can't fix everything, and that's very painful.
Mm-hmm. But I like what you said about that they do grieve through their wives, because I'll give presentations at the Compassionate Friends, and by the way, in July, Irv's going to be our plenary speaker for the Professional Day at Compassionate Friends, and we have a great conference that will be in Dearborn, Michigan. I believe it's the 14th, 15th, and 16th of July. You can go on the Compassionate Friends website and hear about that. But I just lost my train of thought. What were we talking about?
Yeah, come to Michigan. We need all the tourists we can get. This state is really hurting. I mean, this state is grieving, let me tell you.
Oh, we were talking about male-female grief. What I was going to say is at Compassionate Friends, I will give presentations, and I will see husbands and wives sitting, and oftentimes a young couple, the man will have his arm around his wife, and he will look so sad, but she'll be crying, and he'll be kind of holding her. And I always thought he was trying to protect her, but I think he was grieving through her now.
Yes.
When I hear you talk that way, he's experiencing the grief.
Yeah. I mean, that is a part of it. Now, another part of it is that there is this, quote-unquote, man's role to be strong, as if the
right
grieve is to be weak. You know, there's a wonderful book written by Tom Lynch, who's an undertaker. He wrote the book called The Undertaking, and what he said, and this is for all grief, grief is the tax we pay for love. It is not weakness to grieve. It is strength. It's just a measure of how much we loved. But many times men have the idea of, I have to be strong, and if I show my feelings, then who's going to pick up the pieces?
Mm-hmm.
And anytime I'm with a couple, and again, there are a few universals, just as we talked on our last email, anytime with a couple and a man says, gee, I can't grieve because it'll bring her down too much, if I just look at his wife and say, is that true? If he shows his feelings, will that bring you down? And never if I said, yeah, that's true. The response, one variant or another, is always no, because then I will know that I'm not alone in my grief. Then we can grieve together. Then I can connect and reach out to help him. So even if there are times where there are opportunities to grieve together, if men can get over that kind of tough, you know, masculine role.
Mm-hmm. However, together isn't always together. We always talk about on the show about the
right
ups and downs of
that's
grief.
Right.
So
you know, the other thing, because you were making a distinction, a very important one, Gloria, over reproductive loss and the death of an older child, and I want to underscore that, which is that grief is grief is grief. And I don't think one can measure, if you will, grief based on how old the child lived.
Mm-hmm. And all the circumstances around it, like Heidi was saying, she realized she wasn't going to have more children.
Right.
You know, there's a whole
right
grief around
right
that. Right, Heidi?
Absolutely. And you know what? One more thing is seeing friends and family members pregnant or with children triggers ongoing waves of grief and loss.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not sure when those waves are going to overtake you. I mean, both my sisters went on to have healthy baby boys,
mm-hmm,
and I couldn't do that. So, you know, they're constant reminders around you
I couldn't agree more. What I've seen, and you've probably experienced this, Heidi, and have seen as well, is that, and this is a universal, any woman going through a loss like this, when they see a pregnant woman, they just want to run out of there.
Absolutely, and for some reason, all of a sudden, everybody around you is pregnant.
That's right, everybody.
You're just noticing it all the time.
And now people are showing their bellies and everything, so it's really right out there. We've got to go to break right now.
Okay.
Again, I hate to because I'm really enjoying this discussion, but our topic today is healing the broken bond, and morning pregnancy loss. My guest is Dr. Irv Leon, clinical psychologist and adjunct faculty of the University of Michigan Medical Center, and Dr. Heidi Horsley, adjunct professor at Columbia University. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley. These shows are archived on my website, healingthegrievingheart.org, as well as Compassionate Friends website. It's great to know that you can go to these day and night and listen to any of the shows that we've recorded. Please stay tuned for more from Dr. Gloria Horsley.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. LibraryofLife.org is a proud sponsor of Healing the Grieving Heart. An everlasting memorial website created at LibraryofLife.org is a permanent place to cherish and share your loved one's life through photographs, personal stories, poems, music, video, and heartfelt reflections. LibraryofLife.org helps thousands of families connect to a community of people who are dealing with a similar loss. I, too, have created a beautiful website for my son, Scott, and know that the process is simple and can be tremendously healing. Visit LibraryofLife.org today to find out more.
Women, do you feel that you're too old to be active, too old to be beautiful, too old to have fun, or too old to be fabulous? Well, if that's what you think, then there's good news for you. You're wrong. Tune in to Voice America every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Aging Outside the Box, Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell. Aging Outside the Box is a fabulous, fun program that gives you every reason to feel greater than you ever have. Host Shirley Mitchell and O.E. Cruiser Small will cover phenomenal topics such as women's issues, health, diet, exercise, nutrition, faith, travel, and many other concerns for women of all ages. Feel young, feel smart, and feel fabulous by tuning in to Aging Outside the Box. Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffered the loss of a child.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. Today our topic is Healing the Broken Bond, Mourning Pregnancy Loss, and my guest is Dr. Irv Leon, clinical psychologist, adjunct professor, University of Michigan. He's a bereaved sibling as well as a bereaved father in that his wife lost three ectopic pregnancies and had unsuccessful attempts at in vitro fertilization. Also on the show today is Dr. Heidi Horsley, adjunct professor at Columbia University School of Social Work. Well, welcome back, both of you. And one of the things that we were talking about a little bit at break earlier on in the show was how people could, our audience out there who have suffered the loss of a child, the loss of a pregnancy, some of the things that they can do to help them. And Irv was talking about that it's great to maybe do a quilt, or we were talking about writing a story. And I also wanted to talk to the audience again and remind you about the Library of Life. It is such a great thing to do. You can create a memorial website for your child by going to libraryoflife.org. And for $50 a year, in a lifetime, you can create a site remembering that child that may would have been. You can create a site with poems, poetry, whatever you want, just the name of the child. You don't have to have a picture, or you can have a picture. You can do a drawing. You can do whatever you want and put it on that website for to remind you of that precious one in your life. Well, welcome back, Heidi and Irv.
Hello.
Lisa. Good to have you back on the show. And we were talking at break a little bit about, this is our last break, so I wanted to ask both of you if you had some things that you wanted to talk about that we missed on the show. Somebody want to go for it?
Irv, go for it.
Well, one of the things, we've talked about some, but can't emphasize enough, that what really makes a lot of these losses unique is how powerful a blow it is to a woman's self-worth. Mm-hmm. I remember being at a wedding for a good friend, and the priest was saying how they were going to become co-creators with God in terms of forming a family. And that's the kind of blow to one's self-worth. I mean, one can really feel close to the divine when one makes a child. And as in my wife's poem, one can feel one's taking a step closer to death when one doesn't give birth to a live child. So the sense of pain, the sense of, there's also a sense of feeling omnipotent, all-powerful as a parent. I'm supposed to do this. Even cows can do this. Why can't I? That kind of really painful devaluation, feeling lousy about oneself, can really make one feel more down than in other kinds of loss. We know that in the death of older children, the parent will always feel guilty. But there's a particular, another thread of guilt in terms of feeling like their body didn't work in the way that it was supposed to. And I find that just sort of talking about that stuff, playing it out, it tends to subside for most women after a while.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have something on my refrigerator that helped me because I really felt like, why can't I do this? Like you said, anybody can get pregnant. Animals get pregnant. I mean, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to get pregnant. And I have something that Joseph Campbell said, and he said, we must be willing to let go of the life we have planned so that we can embrace the life that is waiting for us. And there are many wonderful ways to bring children into your lives. Mm-hmm. And Irv and I have both adopted and have wonderful children. So there are ways that you can bring children into your lives eventually, if pregnancy is not an option.
That's right.
And you don't even have to adopt. You can adopt your neighbor's kids. There are big brother, big sister programs, you know, all sorts of things that you can get involved in. And that's one of the things that we haven't gotten into. I think we can do a whole show on it, is how about the siblings?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I have done some work in seeing that when this doesn't get addressed, that siblings can have very strong reactions. I'm happy to say that generally this is more out in the open, so the kinds of reactions that siblings had, at least in the book that I wrote, are not as extreme now as I think they had been when these losses weren't dealt with.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, Heidi, did you think your son, you have a son, was he impacted by all of this and not knowing, or
I didn't think he was until I heard him talking to his friend. Children know a lot more than you give them credit for.
Exactly.
And they make up things and have magical thinking if they are not told about what's going on. I heard him say to his friend, God would only put one baby in mommy's tummy, and that was me. So we have to go to China and get my sister, but we have to hurry and get there before someone else gets her first.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically had to kind of talk to him about that was we were going to get her regardless. But it was interesting what he understood, because I thought he didn't know anything of what was going on.
Yeah.
But he had overheard some things.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the sibling stuff, because it's very common for parents to believe, particularly with young children, I'm just talking about 2-3-year-olds, that they don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
They may not be able to talk about what's going on, but they know things are going on more than we realize. They're like little scientists. They want to piece
mm-hmm.
their world and understand it, and we need to give them the facts of what did happen, and it can be explained in simple terms about the baby died in mommy's, I would prefer the right word, uterus, and saying tummy, and kids can understand that, but it has to be parents willing to talk about it. So
and if we don't give them age-appropriate information, they will fill in those facts with
right.
information that's not accurate.
Right. Right. I remember I was giving a conference once, and this was in Canada, and a little girl, she was probably 3 years old, when she touched her bereaved brother, and she got afraid because her hands were so cold. Mommy, mommy, my hands are cold. What was she afraid of? She was afraid that death was contagious. She was afraid that if she touched the dead baby, that maybe it was going to harm her. So just to know that this is not contagious, it's not going to hurt you, and death is two things. It's permanent, this baby's never coming back, and nothing works. There's no feeling, there's no thinking, so that the child, the sibling, doesn't have to worry that if the baby's in the graveyard, that the baby feels cold at night. There's no feeling, there's no hurt.
Herb, I have a question for you,
yeah.
kind of in this vein.
Sure.
How does our audience know if they need therapy?
Well, you know, I have a kind of, I guess, gentle approach to that, which is that if you're feeling you're not getting the support that you need, it really is useful to meet with somebody who is experienced in this area.
important point, experienced in the area.
Yeah, I would say that. And as I said before, while I am not against medication for those people in a clinical depression, soon after a loss like this, one certainly has depressed feelings, but it wouldn't necessarily be a clinical depression. And just being able to sit and work with someone and helping them work out those feelings can go a long way. Sometimes that's 2 sessions, sometimes it's 20 sessions. Depending on what other stuff come up, it could be much longer. Though for these losses, and this is different than the death of an older child. And again, I'm not weighing one grief as worse or better than another, but the cost of grieving for perinatal loss, in my experience, tends to be, and I don't want to be too hard and fast with time frames, 6 months to a year. Mm-hmm. Most people, by a year, after they get over the anniversary, are feeling much more on their feet. Do they ever completely get over it? Of course not. But there's not the acute grief. With the death of an older child, as we all know, it's much, much longer than that.
Yeah.
So if one is in acute grief and it keeps going on and on and on and there's no relief, that would be a sign. If one is having, you know, serious suicidal ideation, what I mean is really thinking of killing themselves. Many times when there's a loss like this, one might wish that one was no longer alive. That's not the same as really beginning to think more seriously. If one is doing things like getting into substance abuse, those are the kinds of significant red flags. If one is so depressed after a number of months that one is unable to get out of bed, one is unable to function, those are the kinds of things that I think it's crucial. But I think anybody who feels they're not getting support can go to a professional if they are skilled in that area.
Or
area I quickly want to add is support groups.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Or a support group. Compassionate Friends are also through your hospital. You can find some support groups. Well, it's time for us to close our show now. And do you guys have any quick parting words? Just no. Okay, great. Hey, thank you for being on the show, Dr. Herb Leon, clinical psychologist and adjunct professor at University of Michigan Medical School. People want your article. Can they email you?
Sure.
Where would they email you at?
Irv, I-R-V, dot Leon, L-E-O-N, at Prodigy, P-R-O-D-I-G-Y, .net.
Great. And
if you have a question, too, I'd be happy to. You know.
Okay. Oh, or with a question, great. That's a nice offer. And you can get a hold of Dr. Heidi Horsley or me on my website, healingthegrievingheart.org. Thank you both so much for being on the show. It's been a great show. You're great folks, and we love the work you're doing. Please stay tuned again next week to hear when our topic will be the afterlife connection. A therapist reveals how to communicate with departed loved ones, and my guest will be Dr. Jane Greer. This show is archived on my website, healingthegrievingheart.org, as well as Compassionate Friends website. This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. Please stay tuned again next Thursday at 9 Pacific Standard Time, 12 Eastern, for more of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal and support. Remember, others have been there before you and made it. You can too. You need not walk alone. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley.
Thank you for joining us today on Healing the Grieving Heart. Join us again next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.